Hello and welcome to episode 27 of the Derailed Podcast. I'm Chris.
And I'm Fred.
And Fred, it's tomorrow.
It is 1:15 in the morning.
Yeah. So this is kind of a lightning round. So what we thought we'd do is, with the holiday season and stuff, it's actually really hard to coordinate our schedules and stuff like that. So my original idea was that we meet up earlier today than we normally do. We play our game of 1862 and then we could chat about it on the podcast. It took way longer than we expected. I think the rules took a lot longer and I think we kind of played it slow. We were having a little bit too much of a good time. There was a lot of chatting and banter and stuff. We weren't really in a rush. But now we found ourselves at 1:15. So we thought what we'd do is we won't do like mail and Patreon stuff and all that this week. We'll do that in the next proper episode. So we just thought this episode, we're literally just going to chat about kind of our first impressions of 1862, which we just played.
Yes.
Just played.
Yep.
Yeah. So we wanted to get an episode out to you guys. We did skip one over Christmas, so we didn't want to skip any more. But yeah, bear with us. We're trying to squeeze them in where we can. It's hard with family members and stuff on holiday and all that to try and make time for it. So
yeah.
Yeah, man. So what did you think?
Oh man, I loved it.
Me too.
I thought it was amazing. Yeah, I thought it was really, really cool.
I think we were both really taken with it.
Yes.
I think my initial impression was that rules teach took like 90 minutes or something.
But I didn't mind it. I was enjoying hearing the different rules and stuff.
And I think we were all in such a relaxed mood that I think even that took a long time. We were making a lot of jokes about it and stuff and whatever, whatever. I also had read most of the rule book, but I had to catch up on like the last few pages.
Okay, yeah.
When we were here, I was trying to read it today. During the day. So yeah, I think it shouldn't necessarily take that long, but I think it speaks to how much of this is different from an 18XX, right? Because we obviously have all played plenty of 18XX at this point, and there's so much that's different. This was just teaching the differences.
Mm.
This is basically unlike pretty much any other 18XX you've played.
Yes.
A lot of the fundamental stuff is the same, like laying tiles and buying and selling stocks, but a lot of the fundamental stuff has actually been changed as well.
Mm.
Not even necessarily just layering stuff on top. A lot of the core rules in this are actually changed.
Yeah.
I think the big one is how you calculate routes. That was the biggest change for me.
Yeah, because you have three different kinds of trains. The route calculation definitely. Also, you have to hit your home station and then, like, you can't have just two routes on complete opposite sides of the boards and stuff like that. So that took a little bit of getting used to, but not too much. I don't think it was too bad.
So what I found interesting about it was that we taught these rules. They took forever.
Mm.
But then afterwards, I didn't find myself reaching much for the rule book at all. People would say, how does this work? And I'm like this.
Yeah.
Like, I felt like I'd internalized most of it and it was fairly easy to remember the actual rules. Strategy-wise, not so easy.
Yeah.
To figure out what you should be doing, because there's mergers in this game and they seem to actually form a very core part of the game.
Yes.
Something not like a edge case thing, like something you should be doing often.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you did that very early and were very successful with that. Yeah. I only did mine much later and my game was a hot mess. I came last by a long shot.
Mm.
But I think a lot of the rules easiness comes down to GMT's production.
Oh, the production is fantastic. Like, almost everything you want to know is on the board somewhere.
Yeah.
Except for the one thing I think they could have had on the board, or on that little sheet for the long game, short game, whatever, was the train limits in corporations. Yeah. But that's on the manifest, on that sheet.
Yeah, there's like a little helper sheet that it's on. Yeah. But there's just so much that they've done to make it easier. And we just kept finding stuff. We're like, this is so clever.
Yeah.
So like, you can't, the trains are double-sided because there's three different types of trains. So you flip them different ways or flip them over. But what they have is like a little phase card for every phase of the game. So sort of like, instead of like two trains, three trains, four trains, you have phase A, phase B, phase C. But they'll have, like in phase A, they'll have a little card that you put in the train section and tell you all the trains available,
what the limits are,
what their costs are. Just like little stuff, like it's like in 46 where you can triple jump or quadruple jump or whatever on the market. Above every single space, it'll actually tell you the totals you need for each of those.
And that saves a lot of time, I think.
Oh, so clever. Just so many little things. Like in this game, home stations get covered up. Your home station isn't reserved for you, essentially. But they have a little mini map of the board on the actual board.
Yep.
And at first we're like, why is there like a little mini map here?
Yes.
But then when you're playing, it's everything is covered up. It's like, okay, where does this company float? You just look at the little mini map and you can tell straight away because it's a carbon copy.
Yeah.
Just with all the home stations filled in. Yeah. Just so much clever stuff.
Yeah.
they really put a lot of love and work into this. You can tell that they've playtested this tons and tons of times. And every time someone was like, oh, it would actually be really useful if we could X, Y, Z. They're like, cool, we'll put that in.
Yeah.
46 was a pretty good production. This has topped that for me. Like, they've added way more stuff just to make everything feel easier. And with a game with this much rules overhead, it really helped a lot.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
A lot.
Yeah, I know, the production was amazing, I think. Yeah.
Even the different types of trains. So you get some trains that are like hex trains or whatever, and some trains that can stop at cities. So even with those, like the actual train card, if it's a hex train card, the number that shows how many hexes it can be will be in a hex.
Yeah.
Whereas with the ones that can only hit the circle stations, the number will be in a circle. Just like tiny little stuff like that where they're just always indicating to you how it works, what it does.
Yeah. Once you know what to look for, then it's all just there. Like so the info is just there, right there. So the locals can't run offboard, whereas the others can, and they show the little offboard locations on that, on the train card as well, and the local doesn't. Yeah, I know. Very, very well done. Very clever.
But probably worth mentioning, we played this with Rudy and Simon, and both of them felt like it was too much.
Yes.
So where Fred and I were like, oh my God, this is amazing. We love this. Like, this is so cool. There's all these levers. This is so interesting. They were a little bit overwhelmed with how many differences there were and how much extra stuff there was layered on top.
Yeah.
So what Rudy said was that he can certainly appreciate like what a clever design it is, and that if you put a lot of hours into this, you could probably internalize a lot of it and it would be okay. He's just not sure if it's worth the commitment that it would require from him to actually grow accustomed to all of this stuff.
Which is fine. Like I said to him, like 18XX has such a vast spectrum of games that everyone can find their level that they're comfortable with and where they enjoy the game and it's not too much. And
Right. So you have like 1889, which is like as pure and simple as can be, or something like 1830. And then you have something like this, which is just like, we were joking, like a mad scientist designed this game. It just has, I don't even want to say everything from every game put in, because this has stuff that I haven't seen in any other game.
Yes. They threw in all the levers and added some more, like you said.
Yeah. They just changed everything. So I'm trying to think, like, I mean, I think we should maybe lay out some of the big rules differences. So like we said, there's three types of trains.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe just to briefly go through those, you get local trains that can't go off board. But they can only go to cities and towns, basically. And those are pretty straightforward. You get freight trains, which are pretty interesting. Freight trains are probably the most difficult train to understand.
I think if we hadn't played with hex trains before, freight trains would have been even harder to understand. But if you know hex trains, then freight trains, you can, with a little bit of effort, get your head around it.
So freight trains are basically, they are hex trains. But what's weird about them is if you have like three trains for freight trains, you have to join them together and you have to run one route of six in a line, essentially. And then you count the hexes that you've crossed, but only in a straight line. So if there's a shorter straight line than the route you took, that's how many hexes you count. They're pretty weird. And you
only pay the start and end stations.
Yeah, yeah. They only hit the start and
besides
the end.
Besides the hexes in between.
Plus all the hexes in between, you get paid a certain amount for them. So they're pretty weird.
Yeah.
And then you get the express trains, which are a little bit more straightforward. They skip towns. They can run off board. So those are, you would have played with them in other games probably before.
Yeah.
Those trains that sort of skip little towns and just hit the big cities only.
Yeah.
But where it gets really weird is that it's not just have a token somewhere, run a route, including that token. All your trains have to intersect with each other.
Yeah.
So you have to have one of your trains. You can have one train of each type as long as you have permits to run those trains. So each company at the beginning of the game randomly gets assigned a permit for a freight train, a local train, or an express train.
Yeah.
Through merging those companies together, you can get more permits. Mm. So you can have a company that has two or three different permits, and you can then have trains of each of those types, and you can run trains of each of those types. But so let's say you're running multiple trains of different types. One of your trains has to run through your home station, but then the others have to run through, they call that your main run. Then your other trains have to run through any station that that train ran through.
Yeah.
So your other trains do not have to run through your home station at all. They don't have to run through any token of yours at all.
Yeah.
But they have to intersect with another train that did.
Yeah.
And then it gets even weirder, because each hex will only pay once. So if you hit the same hex with two different trains, which you'd have to intersect them, that hex won't pay for the second train.
Yes.
So it's weird. It sounds weird because it is weird, but not too hard in practice.
I didn't find it too difficult to get the hang of it.
But again, we found a lot easier than Simon and Rudy. Yeah. So there's something to be said for, I guess, more experience in 18XX.
Yeah.
I think the more experience you have, because we've played more than them.
Mm.
We've played with other people. We've played quite a lot two-player.
Yeah.
Rudy has missed quite a few games. We've played quite a few games with just me, you, and Simon.
Mm.
So Rudy struggled with it quite a lot. And I think we've just internalized so much that the routing stuff has become a lot easier for us. And so even if you add different layers or rules on top of routing, it's like, cool, we do this, 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 this.
Yeah.
It just feels quicker and easier.
Yeah.
Yo, but this game, man. There's so many rules that we can't really go over all of them, but I'm just trying to think of like the most interesting stuff.
Well, the other thing that I think was interesting is there are no privates in this game.
Right.
Instead, you have a lot of companies, and you also have this parliament round before the stock round, which is really cool. I found that very interesting. So you can basically kind of like appeal to parliament to get the rights to float a company, which might cost you something. It's like a little bit of an auction. And then thematically to me, it makes sense. If parliament approves this company, then it's a full cap company because they're kind of willing to, as their role as the bank, put in some money into this company as well. After the parliament round, there's the normal stock round. But anything float during that round is partial cap, which is really cool. That's a cool decision there.
And it's proper partial cap. It's like 1846 partial cap in the sense that it still floats at 50%, same as the full cap companies in parliament round. But your other shares go into your treasury and money that is earned. Dividends paid go into the treasury if you have shares in the treasury.
Except that you can't just issue shares like you can in 46. Yeah,
you can't sell them unless you're trying to buy a train.
Yeah. Only if it's an emergency train buy, right?
Yes, yeah. Only if it's an emergency train buy, yeah.
Yeah. So that's really interesting. So for me, I thought the free money was coming from Parliament. So I paid, in some cases, quite a hefty like auction fee to be able to float the companies that I wanted to. But then you get full cap, so you get access to that other free money. But it can be after that, it can be very tricky to get more money into a company. And one of the good ways to get money into a company is to merge. So full cap float another company and then merge those two companies and now you've got more money in your one single company.
The merge is so tricky. So the rules for the merge are like 2 pages long and you're so confused. And when we actually did it, it was actually really easy.
Yeah.
The first time we did it, we're like, oh, that was easy. And every merge after that was simple.
Yeah. The first time we did it, we just took the manual and followed it step by step. And then it all made sense after that, I think. We were able to do it without the manual.
There's almost like edge cases written for the merge, but it even says in the rule book, this will only happen in exceptional circumstances, which we obviously didn't get. So for us, the merges were actually really simple.
Yeah.
But I found them so tricky because you lose shares, but you potentially increase the value of the shares that you have. But I found merges later on were much worse, it seemed, than mergers earlier.
I think early on they're good because you get to start off with a bang. And then later on, when cert limit becomes a bit of an issue. The interesting thing about the director shares in this game as well is they're worth 30%.
Mm.
So one director share is worth a lot. So I got to a stage like I merged very early on and then floated another company. My initial plan was to merge again to get more money into the first company. And then I realized like I'm going to give up this director share if I merge and I'm going to be so low on certificates then. Well, on shares. And then I ended up not doing it. The other thing is because a company can't score a tile twice, there's London in this game, which pays a lot. And I heard that, I think, from Train Shuffling podcast.
Right, yeah.
That London is important to get to. So I made that part of my game plan was to get to London. And if you have two companies, like each of them can hit London. But if you merge them, you can only hit London once with that company. Yeah. So that also became a factor. So in the end, I didn't merge my third company into that because of this, the director shares and because of hitting London multiple times. And that worked out well. And then later on, even floated another company and managed to hit London with that.
And that's where I can see choosing partial cap being better, potentially in terms of financing companies in the later game, sort of like the mid to late game, in that it's quite easy to double, triple jump your shares, especially from lower prices.
Yeah.
So you could float them for quite cheap and then buy a couple of trains or whatever you need, and then you can get those big jumps. And then when you buy those from the treasury, you'll put a lot more money in.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, that's something that I didn't do. Simon Partial Cap floated a company, but I don't think any of us...
No, we were all after the free money. But I can see how instead of refinancing through merging, you could try and slow trickle.
Yes, but it's also a trade-off because there's a company that you want to float and the parliament round happens before the stock round. So you... By waiting to float it in the stock round, you risk someone else grabbing it up during the parliament round.
Well, what I loved about the parliament round is that the way that it works is not just you've got priority, you get first choice. You have to put the company up for auction.
Yeah.
And so if you got priority on parliament, you get to put the first bid on it. But everyone gets a shot at bidding for that.
Yeah.
Which I actually really, really like, because oftentimes in the late game or middle game, there's these sort of like high value companies that everyone wants. And sometimes with priority deal, it can feel almost like a little bit unfair. It's like, oh, I didn't have priority. And yeah, you can manipulate it to some extent, but sometimes it feels a bit out of your control and you're like, oh crap, I'm going to go third or whatever because this idiot bought a share and now I'm going to go third and I'm not going to get the company I want, et cetera, et cetera. Right. But this was great because if there was a company you really wanted, you just have to pay for it.
You
have to be willing to outbid someone. So there wasn't that feel bad of not getting to float the company you wanted.
Yeah.
Either you didn't get to float and you made it expensive for someone else.
Yes. Yeah.
Well, I really, really like that. So parliament round happens every time before stock round. So it goes parliament round, stock round, and then operating rounds.
Yeah. No, that is very interesting.
There's so much more that I feel like I needed to fiddle with. I only got into mergers late and then I had some really bad ones. And then I had to basically... What you can do in this game is if you are forced to buy a train, knowing that at the start of your turn, you can sort of say, oh, I'll just merge this into the company that does have a train. So I did that, but I lost so many shares and I didn't even increase my share value. So it was literally like I just gave away 5 shares.
Right.
Yeah. So it was awful. I would have been maybe better off like trying to emergency buy or something.
Right. Yeah.
So it's not always the answer. So I remember in the early game, you would do a merge and your share price would go up a fair bit. And you were like, yeah, this kind of balances out. I lost 3 shares, but my share price like went up, you know, 50% or whatever, kind of feels like it worked out. But later on, that wasn't happening.
Right.
Yeah. People were merging and then their share price would kind of stay the same. And then you've just really lost out.
Yes. Yeah.
Completely. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. The other thing that I think is crucial about this is the train limit in the companies is 3 per train type. So when you float a company, each company has a 1 permit for a type of train. And that's the only kind of train that that company can buy. And those are randomly assigned, I guess.
Randomly assigned at the beginning, yeah.
So that's quite a variability in the game for future players. But anyway, so I think if you're going to merge, it's important to merge with a company with a different type of train permit. Because if the train limit is 3, it's 3 per train type. So if you have 2 different permits, you can have 6 trains at the beginning of the game in that company. So I think that is crucial. Like merging 2 companies with the same train type, I think is a waste of time.
Sometimes it's not though, right? So I had a situation where I thought it might not be a waste of time. So what I was thinking was, let's say I have 1 company with a freight permit. Then I have another company, I float another company with a freight permit. Then I full cap it. Buy a sick freight train for it, then merge it with my other company. So I acquire the other company, merge it in, and now I've got 2 big freight trains that I can glue together or whatever.
Right. Yeah, I guess you can.
So when you want to access the treasury of another company, it can sometimes be worth merging it, even if it's the same permit, because maybe you want like 2 express trains or something because you have a route in mind that can use that, and that's all you need.
Yeah, no, maybe. I'm not convinced yet. I think it would still be better to merge with a company that has a different type of train.
Sometimes I found that they didn't play nice together, though.
Okay.
Like I had a freight train and a local train or something, or an express train once, and it was really difficult to make work because my freight train needed to end at the spot where my express train was intersecting.
Right.
And that meant I didn't score that. And your freight train only scores 2 areas and the tiles in between. So to lose the scoring on that was, it wasn't nice.
Interesting. Yeah, so my first company after the merge didn't have a freight train. It had local and what's the other one? Express. And they worked well together. So I actually bought a second local because that's another way that you can get a little bit of money into the company. Because locals pay... per hex, they pay a fixed amount to the company treasury on top of dividends they pay normally. So I used that on my first company to keep getting a little bit more money into that company for a big part of the game. And eventually that company did have to emergency train buy, but I think I got it permanent for like, I don't know, $70 from my personal money, which was a bargain. So just by doing things like that and also buying shares. So the company can buy shares from the bank pool, one per OR. And I also did that because that's another way to get money into the company is that dividend will then pay into the company. And in future, if you or anyone else buys that share from the company is going to get that money. So if that share value is going to increase, that's a good way to make get money into the company as well. Yeah. Yeah. Many considerations. I mean, I could be wrong about it being important to merge with different train permits. For me, maybe it just worked out in this play for me.
It feels like it's better earlier on because it's very easy to hit train limits of one type earlier on. I had three freight trains. I bought three freight trains up front.
Yeah.
And then I was stuck.
Yeah.
So there it would have been great to merge something else into that. Mm. I feel like later on, it's much harder to have like, so many trains that you need different permits. Yeah. And sometimes the trains of the same type play nicely together.
Yeah.
So like freight trains play really nicely together because you can sort of bolt them together and do these big runs. And then like local trains potentially play very nicely together because you can intersect at a very low value hex, but hit all the expensive ones, which is more difficult to do with like a freight and a local or something like that. Yeah. So. Yeah, it's kind of interesting. I think we'd have to play it more to see. I'm not sure. I initially thought the same as you. Initially, I was like, oh, yeah, you want different train permits and then you can combine them or whatever. But the fact that you have to combine them, some of them don't necessarily combo as well together as they do trains of the same type. Okay. I feel like trains of the same type potentially combo very well together. Or there's some combos that don't work as well.
Yeah.
I don't know. There's so much to consider.
Yeah. No, there is for sure. Yeah.
So what you did really well was that you had a lot of companies going. You're not really at that much risk in this game.
No. You can't get anything dumped on you really because you can sell the president share.
Yeah. You can sell president shares into the bank pool, which is pretty crazy. That's pretty different. Yeah. Also, yeah, even if your company ends up trainless, it will never bankrupt you. You can do this thing called refinancing where you basically everyone has to give up half their shares and you get 10 times the par value into the company. So you just get it like refinanced all over again. Mm. Really cool little gimmick. We never actually ended up doing that because we'd ended up merging them instead. But I can kind of see it maybe being more worthwhile that to
could,
do the refinancing
could be an interesting thing to do with a partially floated company actually. There's partial cap it. Well, not partially float, partial cap it, and then refinance it.
Oh, I didn't even think of that. Yeah, yeah. You're right, because then you're getting a lot of money into it.
Yeah, then you're getting a full cap amount of money plus some.
I don't even know how all of that works, because we didn't have to do the rules for refinancing, but it seemed pretty similar to the merge, but without the exchanging of shares.
Yeah.
Yeah, so there's a lot going on.
Mm.
It's tricky to wrap your head around. But it's not impossible.
No.
I think that if you have experience playing 18xx games and you're willing to have a kind of learning game, if you're willing to, maybe recognize the first one, you may not exactly know what the optimal stuff is and things like that.
I think you should have a bit of experience with a variety of 18xx games. Like you should have experience with full cap. You should have experience with partial cap, maybe with hex trains as well. Normal trains.
Yeah.
If you have that, then I think it's doable.
I mean, like anything, if you really want to, if you're really committed to just learning it and playing it until you get it, you can, right?
Yeah.
This would absolutely be the furthest thing from my recommendation for a first 18xx. Yeah.
No, not a chance.
This is a game for people who have played a pretty wide variety of games and just want something that's totally off the wall and different.
Yeah.
It's a very interesting pickup for GMT.
Mm.
A very interesting pickup for them. I'm kind of surprised that this is what they went with.
Yeah. Well, I mean, like Rudy said, they do war games as well. So
we were talking about it that I wonder how many people are out there who bought 1846 from GMT and they're like, oh, I love this. This is like a Euro, like fun, friendly, whatever. And then they buy this monstrosity and it's got like three pages on mergers and acquisitions. And they're like, what is going on? This is a huge jump from 1846. Yeah. So if any poor people out there just went the GMT route and they've played is 46 and they try climb into this.
Oh, yeah.
Godspeed.
That's going to be tricky, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, that's going to be tough.
Yeah. Did you have a favorite aspect of this, like 62?
Ooh. I had a lot of favorites. So did we talk about the fact that there's no blank hexes?
No, we haven't mentioned that.
So what's weird when you look at this game, because you have 16 companies, right? So there's 20 companies in the game, 16 will be in the game. So you remove four at the start of the game. And you'll look at this map and it's tiny.
It's small, yeah.
It's tiny. This is way smaller than like 1889's map. It's a really, really tiny map. But if you look closely at it, you'll see that every single hex is a city or a town.
Mm.
There are no blank.
Yeah.
There's no wasted space, so to speak.
Which is very interesting.
And there's all these offboards, and they call them ports, but they're also essentially offboards that just go into water all over the place. It's pretty cool, actually. The track building is almost quite simple.
Yeah.
Even the tile manifests, if you look at them, they're not long at all. They don't even, they actually even change the layout of it, where it's just like almost like a flow chart with just some arrows, because there's just that few options.
Yeah.
What's interesting is all the green tiles only create separate tracks. So those green tiles that have two separate tracks on the same tile.
Right.
There's none that sort of split a track.
The tiles, you mean?
No, I mean the green tiles. There's no green tiles that split track. There's no like wire. There's no like thing that bends this way and this way. They all have two separate black lines on them that don't touch.
Hey, not the cities. The cities split.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, so it's the tiles that don't split, yeah.
Oh, I guess they would have to be towns. Yes, yeah, yeah.
Because there are no blanks, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. There's no blanks. Yeah. Anything. Yes, yeah. Yeah, sorry. So the cities are normal. If you upgrade cities to green, you have the normal city stuff.
Tiles, all of those normally. Right. Yeah. Yeah.
But all the other ones, the towns in this game are essentially the like blank hexes.
Yeah.
Even though towns pay 20, towns aren't bad.
Yeah.
Yeah, but it's weird because the green towns all upgrade into separate tracks. So you'll actually place the town on one of the two tracks, whichever one it was on.
Yeah,
yeah. There's which no is a
clever way junctions. To limit the number of tiles.
Yes,
because that could have like gotten out of hand if they had to print green tiles with towns and all the different combos and things.
Yeah, because if you look, there's actually a lot of green tiles.
Yeah, yeah.
But I think you're not really going to be too limited by actual tiles. This is not a restrictive tile game where there's only like four straight cities or there's only like one green tile that does this or whatever. It seems like you're pretty much going to have most of what you need.
Yeah.
The challenge is in sort of making the routes work. There's a lot of tokens, so companies that are floated at partial cap buy all their tokens up front, and they can buy up to 7 tokens. So there's a lot of tokens floating around this game. Also, when you merge, you replace all the tokens. So frequently, we would actually have 6 or 7 tokens belonging to a single company out there.
Yeah.
This isn't quite as restrictive as it sounds, though, because there are so many city tiles.
Mm.
So it's kind of natural that you have all these tokens lying around.
Yeah, and so you can reroute by veering off at a city or something, yeah.
But the most important token is always your home one, because everything has to come back to that.
Yeah, yeah.
In some way or another,
Second most is London, I think.
Yes, yeah. So London's kind of interesting because even though it's an offboard, you have to basically put a token in the offboard location. So it's not a token that you can run to or from. It just gives you access to the offboard.
Yeah.
And it uses your entire tile lay to do it.
To do it, yeah.
Also, what's interesting is yellow tiles you can place 2 at a time.
Mm-hmm.
So you can fill up the board relatively quickly, as small as it is.
Yeah. Yeah, but London pays 100 in the yellow phase already.
Yes.
200 in the brown phase. So, yeah, it's big.
Yeah, London is no joke.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's the more you talk about it, the more you just bring up stuff that's different, right? Mm. The trains are divided into phases, which is kind of weird because the green phase won't necessarily be... The green phase has a series of letters. So the green phase starts in B. I think it's B, C, and D are green. But, for example, the offboard greens will only pay once you get to C.
I think D is brown, but it's a non-permanent brown train.
E is the first brown, I think. I think it's B, C, D is green, and then I think... Or maybe I'm wrong. No, I'm not, because B is the first green, but then C and D pay offboard green.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, but B doesn't, yeah. E is the first brown, yeah. Yeah, so it's weird. So B will get you into the green phase, but it won't necessarily increase the value of your offboard. So you have to pay attention to the way things are written and stuff like that.
Yeah, but it is marked clearly.
It's marked clearly. It's not that hard. It's just that it's another thing that's going to be different from what you're used to.
Yeah.
But the trains will clearly say which ones they rusted by and things like that.
Yeah.
Oh, you get warranties for trains. We didn't make much use of those.
No,
I think because we didn't push the trains as fast.
Yeah.
So warranties are generally going to be more of a factor when you're pushing trains very quickly, which you definitely can do in this game because there's a lot of companies to float and you can merge and refinance and all that stuff. So there's a lot of opportunity for pushing trains quickly.
Mm.
I think this game could potentially be incredibly short. So there's actually, there's options for a short game, a standard game, and a long game.
Mm.
We played the short game and it took like 5 hours, but I think that's on us. I think potentially that short game could be really, really fast.
Mm.
If we were used to the game, because one of the end game triggers is buying one of the, essentially the diesels, the last train in the list.
Yeah.
As soon as you buy that, it triggers this end game where you finish that set of ORs and then you run a last set, but you basically just run.
Yeah, no dividends. Building tiles or tokens or anything,
do anything meaningful. Yeah.
Yeah.
So you just get to run your engine essentially, which is pretty cool actually.
Yeah.
But you can get to that H train. It's the H train that does it. You can get to it very quickly actually if you are pushing those trains aggressively.
Yeah.
So you get these train warranties that you can buy when you buy a train. And every time you run a train, you lose a warranty essentially. But if that train would be rusted, if it has a warranty, it doesn't rust until it's run out of warranties.
Yeah. Which is quite cool. So it basically guarantees you if you feel that the train you're about to buy is going to rust before you can run it, then buy some warranties. You can buy up to 3, I think, right?
Yep.
At £50 each. And that'll guarantee you 3 runs of that train at least. So
for us, it wasn't a factor. And I know it's just because we didn't really push trains hard enough. Like the A trains come with a warranty.
Yeah. There's another one as well that comes with one.
The D train,
The D train, okay.
Yeah, which was even more interesting because it takes a little bit to rust that D train. So they clearly expect that there's a chance that you could buy a D train and never get to run it.
Mm.
That's why it comes with a free warranty, which speaks to how particular. I think D's rusted by like G, and that's the train right before H, right? So I think that speaks to how quickly you can potentially get through those trains.
Yeah.
Especially in a short game. If D comes with a warranty, that means that they expect that there's a chance that you'll buy it and not be able to run it.
Yeah.
Which, it means there's a lot of opportunity for some very fast train rushes.
Yeah. Yeah, the interesting thing about deciding whether to buy extra warranties or not is that you don't get to save them until the train rusts.
Like
if you run the train and it's not rusted yet, you still lose a warranty per run for the train.
So. Yeah, so you can't just hoard them and use them once the train actually rusts.
Yeah, so there's a timing thing there. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. You could, what you could do is if you plan on pushing the trains yourself, you could buy them though.
Yeah.
Which would give you a little bit of extra control.
Yeah.
Interesting
game.
I loved it.
I think my favorite thing is the merger still. Like I like the mergers in Cologne as well. I think I do like mergers in general.
No, I think that's a good pick for the favorite thing because it's sort of the bread and butter of the game.
Mm.
It feels like it anyway. It feels like that's
like
sort of
a crucial aspect of
the game. Core thing that you want to be doing, and the timing of it is very important.
Yeah.
There's so much you can potentially do with mergers.
Sitting here thinking of more things you can do with mergers. Like, I think floating a full cap company and then merging with a partial cap company is a potential strategy that I want to try next time, because that partial cap company can get you access to tokens for your first company as well. Because when you full cap float a company, you get 3 tokens.
Yes, yeah.
When you partial cap, you can buy up to 7, and then you can merge and get access to those tokens, which is potentially pretty powerful.
And you could merge a full cap company into a partial cap company, which will allow you to have a lot of money up front, but then also refinance that company by buying its shares at a much higher rate later on, because your stock price goes up very quickly in this game.
Yeah, it can. Yeah,
the routes are, the revenues are great on the routes.
And you can quadruple jump. You can jump 4 spaces if you pay enough dividends. Yeah,
exactly. And so if you finance pretty low, you can easily quadruple jump. Without too much, we had quite a few quadruple jumps. It's not this thing that like happens once in a blue moon. So yeah, very interesting in terms of, yeah, there's so many things that you can kind of fiddle with there.
Yeah, yeah. And the stock track in this game is also very, very different. There are no like ledges or anything on the stock track.
No, none.
But I mean, maybe a semi-ledge is in certain areas. If you sell shares, you don't count one or two of the shares sold in moving the price down and stuff. So that's almost like a semi-ledge, I guess. But yeah. Interesting stock track.
Yeah, there's sort of like a pity one at the bottom, like right near the bottom, the first share sold doesn't count.
Mm.
And also later on when it's more expensive. And then when it gets really expensive, the first something like two or three shares don't count.
Yeah.
I think it's two, huh? Mm. The first two shares don't count.
I think so, yeah.
So if someone sells three of your shares, your stock price only moved on one.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it's kind of interesting. It's, the stock track is not like 46 where it's totally 1D. It's got two columns, essentially,
yeah.
Or two rows, if I could put it that way.
Yeah.
And they sort of offset a little bit. So yeah. Your stock, when you sell it, zigzags down.
Yeah.
So it goes sort of down to the left and then up to the left and down to the left, which is a less of a jump than just moving one full space left.
Mm.
But when you are paying for dividends and things like that, you just move spaces to the right. You don't zigzag.
Yeah.
So the amount of money you lose from selling stock is less brutal. Those are like half jumps. Whereas what you gain from either withholding, that would be losing though, or paying dividends is full jumps.
Yeah.
Essentially, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, quite cool.
Yeah, I think mergers is definitely a good pick for the sort of favorite thing about the game, because it's just, it is fun.
Yeah.
It is really fun trying to figure it out. And I think especially doing them early, because you did one super early.
I did one in the first OR before the one company even operated.
And we're like, whoa, what? This is crazy. And then you got all these tokens and your stock price moved up. And we're like,
I think it might have been a bit too early. Like, I think I could have maybe let it run, both of them run and get the stock price up a little bit more.
Right.
It might have been too early, but I was just keen to give it a try and see what happens.
But it worked super well, actually, because that early game is when having different permits is great.
Because
the trains are cheap. You've like full capped a company. Yeah. So you can buy a lot of these level one or level two trains.
Yeah.
And I think that's what really helped you to have, because you were paying then big dividends and stuff, and you had all these really nice routes and you had London set up already. And
yeah.
Yeah. So you got off to a really good start.
I was first in London, and it took a little while before other people reached London, I think.
Well, it got confusing because you sort of would have this home station that was on the other side of the board, and you're like, oh, wait, I've got to get everything to connect to my home station somehow.
Oh, that's why I didn't float those companies. I floated close to London.
But what's interesting is you can snake there, all the way there, using different trains.
Yeah.
So you can like go from your home station, you can head south and then start your next train from like the whatever the southernmost hex you got to. And then you can actually get to London that way, and you don't even need tokens to do it. It's weird. It's like a whole weird thing where your trains just have to intersect in somewhere.
Yeah.
It sounds very confusing, but once you read the rule book and you play the game, it's not so bad.
Yeah.
If you've played 18XX a fair amount, you're not going to struggle too much.
Mm.
It will just take a long time to get through.
Yeah.
But GMT's great production and just the rules being clearly laid out just makes it very easy to kind of like read it once, explain it to everyone, and then you just kind of go for it.
Yeah.
Yeah, look, overall, I think I really enjoyed it a lot.
Yeah. No, definitely, me too.
From the beginning, I was like, yeah, I'm into this.
Keen to play a two-player with you.
Yes, I've heard that it's pretty good at low player counts. We'd have to confirm that. And I think Fred's going to take the solo rules for a spin for us at some point as well and see how that shakes
definitely
out.
Definitely want to try that, yeah.
So you can give us a solo review
yes.
on that. Yeah, I think that'll be pretty cool to see.
Yeah,
I'd be keen to try it too. I think you could do a lot of stuff. I mean, there's like we say, it's a small board. You'd have a ton of money. You'd just be floating companies and merging left and right. You'd probably have a great time and it'd probably be pretty fun.
Yeah.
Looks like we might have to play two-player after the lukewarm reaction we got from our peers.
From the other two, yeah.
Yeah, so we'll see. But it's only first impressions. Strategically, we don't even have close to a grasp of this thing. So we can't comment too much on strategy. I think we more just wanted to give our impressions in terms of, I guess the feel of the game and sort of, our initial
just first impressions. I'm sure we'll come glamour. Back to it and talk about it more in future for sure.
Yes, definitely. But I already loved it. I don't want to put it in my list yet because it feels a little bit too premature even for that, but I already feel like it would have a higher spot.
Well, that's my bubbling way of doing my list means it's definitely
yeah,
entering the list at 5. So
yes, you're less
I'm
dramatic.
Not gonna move
your
it
less dramatic way
high, but it's definitely entering at 5.
No, I think I wouldn't be surprised if this easily cracked the top 3 for me.
Yeah,
with how I felt about it after the first play. The only part for me that wasn't great was sort of the last like hour or so when like I knew I was just at zero chance.
Right. I was also getting a bit tired towards the end, but yes, it was getting late and
Yeah, because we kind of took our time with it. If we played it again, I'd make an effort to push the trains much faster and float a lot more companies, because I think that's kind of the way to do it.
But then the end came quite quickly. I mean, there's the last couple sort of trains, out of there's nowhere. 2-1 and then it's the H train and then
that triggers the end. So we were sort of like in the F trains, or we just got into the F trains, and then we all floated some stuff and we just easily hit the end game trigger. We're like, oh,
yeah,
right, okay.
Yeah. And the last couple of, the last set of OOs where you're not allowed to build tiles or anything is really cool, because you can just calculate that, which we did. We didn't pay physical dividends with chips or anything. We just calculated that whole last set. Which works well. And it
does.
Quickly.
It kind of wraps it up nicely. The bank is 15,000.
Oh, it's big. Yeah.
So you can end the game by breaking the bank, which I guess is possible if you're really good and you really know how to get these routes pumping, because there's a revenue tracker on the board and it goes up to 1,500.
Mm.
So I think you can play some pretty massive
routes.
Yeah. I think there's definitely the potential. We did not fully unlock that potential for sure. Yeah.
Maybe other people also make a mistake if you're allowed to run a route that big.
Yes, yeah. But
it's doable.
Yeah, it's definitely doable. I can imagine some mega merge company with permits and trains and all kinds of stuff.
Yeah.
Doing some pretty amazing stuff. It's one of those games I'd love to see really experienced players play.
Mm.
I'd just love to see how quickly they push through it and how they handle merges and what kind of stuff they manage to pull off.
Yeah,
I think the train shuffling guys have a play of it. I'm actually keen to watch that.
Oh, they do have one on YouTube, yeah.
Yeah, I'm keen to watch that playthrough. I want to see how they managed as well.
Yeah.
And always interesting, even if people don't have a ton of experience with it or whatever, because I think they've only played it a couple of times, but just to see how they approached it or whatever, what they did differently, how it worked for them.
Yeah.
I just want to see how people play this game, because there's so much weird stuff about it. There's so many different ways to approach it that I think it'll just be fun to see how other people have tackled it.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah.
Were they just going mental and merging nonstop, or were they just floating a ton of companies?
Mm.
We had quite a conservative approach, actually. Like you went all out, but I was pretty conservative. Simon was pretty conservative. I was like disappointed in myself. I was like, what have I done?
Yeah.
Oh, man. I was like, what have I done? I didn't merge any companies. Like, I've been so conservative and I'm like definitely coming last. Like, I've deserved this. Let myself down. I should have just, because normally with new games these days, like, I don't really care about winning. I just want to like pull every lever I can and see what happens. Right. Yeah. So,
and you feel you didn't really do that.
I didn't really do that. No, I don't really know why I didn't do that.
The biggest lever you didn't pull until late in the game.
Yeah. And I think I was just like sort of feeling my way around a little bit. Like I was enjoying myself. I was okay. And I was trying to figure out like how to make my routes work and stuff. But I definitely should have just been way more aggressive.
Yeah.
I think there's definitely room for a lot of aggression in this, in terms of just how much you try and seize control of the game.
Right, yeah.
Because there's a lot of like rusting intervals and things like that. You can put people in uncomfortable spots.
Mm,
I think if you can control, all these floats and just push the thing forward.
Yeah.
Maybe even with some like aggressive refinancing or something like that, just to be the one who's pushing the game forward. Oftentimes, being the one in control of the game means that you can put yourself in a winning position.
Right, yeah. Yeah.
Interesting.
Cool, man.
Yeah, guys. So should we leave it there? Do you have any final thoughts?
No.
I think you said it well, though. I think, I don't know if you mentioned this earlier in the cast, but you said that, there's sort of room for this kind of 18xx and the spectrum of 18xx's, yes, right? That this is something that's going to be totally different from the other 18xx's you have. It's just goes totally crazy and just does everything it wants to do and is a real brain melter and just has all kinds of cool stuff going on. But it's a cool one to have.
Yeah.
Like in your collection of 1836s, it's a cool one to have. If you want something pure like an 1830 or an 89, like we love those games. We yeah. will always play those.
I'm not going to stop playing those because I like this one.
Exactly. Yeah. But if you have kind of a hankering for just like something totally different and something that honestly, I do believe you can get done in a pretty short amount of time with more experience, I think this is a cool one.
Yeah. It's cool that it has the short, normal, and long game.
Yeah.
Which is basically just train
counts. It just changes the train counts, yeah. But it's just a cool one. It's a cool one to own, I think. Yeah. I would recommend picking it up. If you're someone who's sort of like collecting 18XXs or wants like sort of a library of 18XX, I definitely recommend picking it up, even if you're not ready for it yet.
Yeah.
Like at the time I P500 this, I definitely would not have been ready for it. If it had come the next day, we would have been screwed.
Yeah.
So I think it's fine. Even if you put it on your shelf for a while or you tried or you're not sure about it or whatever the case may be, it feels worth owning. GMT has done such an incredible job with this production. Like really credit to them. I think
it's great, yeah.
Very good. What they've done with that. And it's such a reasonable price point. And it's just something very cool, very different, very fun. So yeah, I think if you're someone who's trying to sort of amass a collection of train games, definitely pick it up. Yeah,
this is one to have
for sure. You'll be ready for it one day and you'll enjoy it.
Yeah.
When you are, yeah. Very, very cool. So I'm glad that something like this exists.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
Because it just sort of blows the doors off and just does, does whatever it wants.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Cool.
Cool. Well, thanks, guys. Sorry that this is a short episode and we don't have any South African stuff. Ooh, okay, I've got a South African thing. I actually just remembered this one. And I made a mental note to talk about on the podcast. Let's slip this in here.
Okay.
Before you fall asleep at the table. Okay, so do you know Mthatha? It's like a little
town.
Little nothing town, right? So there was a flight recently, very recently. This was like it could have been like Christmas Eve or something. It was like December. From Johannesburg to Mthatha. The flight landed at 10 past 6, right? Unfortunately, the airport closed at 6 o'clock.
No.
So they arrived and it was closed. It was like you'd arrived at the shops too late. Like,
oh, wow.
Sorry, guys.
What did they do?
They turned around and went back to Johannesburg.
No way.
Geez. Do you know how expensive that must have been?
But they need to refuel.
Dude, I have no idea. So like there was no like baggage handlers. There was no one to like offload the plane. Like the doors of the airport were totally shut. Like they literally couldn't.
How long of a flight is it?
Unload people.
Like an hour or?
Yeah, I don't think it'll be too long. Hey?
So maybe they have enough fuel to make it, but still, sure.
Yeah, but that's an expensive mistake.
Yeah.
But I mean, obviously, they know exactly what time their estimated time of arrival is or whatever, right? Like the fact that no one was communicating to anyone else. Also, the idea of an airport closing at 6 o'clock.
Yeah. Yeah, that wouldn't happen in Joburg. It must just be because it's such a small airport.
No, exactly, yeah. But it was just the most, like,
African
thing. And I was just like, this is ridiculous. An airport, you arrive at the airport, like, sorry, guys, after closing time.
like, pilots are arriving, like, why are the lights off on the runway?
Exactly, come back tomorrow. Yeah, so there was probably, like, no one to, like, wave them in. There was no, like, safety stuff. But I don't know what happened with, like, air traffic control.
Yes, there must be someone on the radio talking to them or something. I don't know.
Yeah, that's the safety stuff is a bit concerning. So I don't know what happened there, but
yeah, no, that's bizarre. Like they shouldn't have even landed because I think taking off is probably a lot of your fuel use.
Maybe they thought if they knocked on the door. So. I don't know.
You're stubborn.
I don't know how it works. They're like all hiding behind the carousels. They're like, go away, we're closed.
That's funny. You are
ridiculous, eh? But how bleak would you be if you had taken a whole flight and you have to come back and then go the next day? They had to go the next day.
Wow. Sure.
Because, I mean, there's not that many flights to Mthatha. But also, it was closed. So, you know, it was only opening in the morning.
There wasn't going to be anything to see anyway that evening in Mthatha.
Yeah, exactly. So bad, man.
That's funny.
What a disaster.
Yeah.
Yeah, man. Okay, sweet, guys. Well, I hope you've all had a good Christmas, Hanukkah, whatever you've got going on, festive season, holidays,
yes,
all that jazz. Yeah. Generally, this time of the year, a lot of people are on leave on holiday.
And by the time you hear this, it's probably New Year. So,
yes,
happy 2020.
Happy 2020. Exactly. New decade.
The year of perfect vision.
Wow.
No, that's not mine. I've heard that somewhere else.
Yeah, well. Not yours, anyway. Not your vision either.
Yeah.
But cool. Thanks, guys. Cool.
Thanks.
Keep well.
Cheers.
Cheers.
If you would like to get in touch with us, we are at derailed18xx on Instagram and Twitter. You can email us, derailed18xx@gmail.com, and we're on Patreon at patreon.com/derailed18xx. Thanks for listening.